listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
And no sooner do I come back on the air than that phone is ringing, and by golly, I bet it's Teddy Roosevelt on the end. How are you?
By Godfrey, sir, you are absolutely right. How are you doing?
We're doing great here. Now, you know, a lot of people, we have a lot of older people here in northern Arizona, and all of us have seen the movie Arsenic and Old Lace, but you are not going to charge up the stairs and yell, "Charge!" Right?
Well, I'm going to yell charge. I don't think you can do Teddy Roosevelt without that. It's the it's the shortest political speech in American history.
That's for sure.
And I think deserves to be commemorated. But no, I originally got into Teddy Roosevelt in spite of myself because I knew Arsenic and Old Lace.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, an agent that I know came to see me and said, you know, we could make a lot of money if you would dress up like Teddy Roosevelt and go around to schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to do it in the worst way, because that's all I knew about Teddy Roosevelt, was he charged up the stairs and said, "Charge!"
Sure.
This agent, this lady, was very persuasive. She got me to read some books, and I hadn't read 100 pages before I realized I was in the presence of a walking miracle, and I got hooked. So I guess the moral is, don't read a book.
Well, you will be on stage Friday the 22nd at the beautiful Prescott Elks Theater here in Prescott. That is a week from Friday, a 7 p.m. stage performance. And you are doing this on behalf of Grand Canyon National Park's Centennial. And the reason for the connection, will you tell me the connection between Grand Canyon and Teddy Roosevelt?
Well, you know, we're celebrating the 100-year anniversary. It's on the 26th, February 26, 1919.
Mm-hmm.
The Grand Canyon became a national park, so we're celebrating the centennial. And it was largely because of Theodore Roosevelt that the canyon became part of the National Park Service. There were folks who wanted to do commercial development in the Grand Canyon, you know, railroads, hotels, in the canyon, and advertisements, you know, billboards on the walls. And he put the kibosh on that. He mm-hmm. used a couple of very obscure laws in order to protect the Grand Canyon. One of which allowed him to declare the floor of the Grand Canyon a presidential bird sanctuary, so that it couldn't be commercially developed. You could no longer do mining and stuff in mm-hmm. the canyon. And of course, he was the father, the godfather, really, of the conservation movement. Part of his greatest part, I think, of his legacy is that he was able to set aside 230 million acres of public land for public use during his presidency, and we're still living out that legacy today.
Now, I understand, too, that a part of your show will offer lessons in patriotism, self-reliance, family values, and the conservation you mentioned. Also, there's a great quote from President Roosevelt. It says, "The Grand Canyon fills me with awe. Let this great wonder of nature remain as it is now. Do nothing to mar its grandeur, sublimity, and loveliness. You cannot improve on it. But what you can do is keep it for your children, your children's children, and all who come after you as the one great sight which every American should see." True?
Yeah, he said that, among a great many other things. He said a whole lot of things about the great natural wonders of America's. You know, it's hard to realize that 100 years or so ago, Americans felt kind of inferior to Europeans, because mm-hmm. we didn't have the great castles and the great cathedrals mm-hmm. and all these wonderful works of art that the Europeans had. But Teddy Roosevelt said, "Nonsense! We've got the Grand Canyon, we've got the Grand Tetons, we've got the Yellowstone, we've got the Sequoia Forests and the Redwood Forests in California. The wonders of Europe pale into insignificance." He regarded that as kind of a patriotic thing. He thought that Americans had no business feeling second rate to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is his, besides that, what do you think is his greatest legacy?
Well, he was, you know, on a political realm, in social issues and political issues, he was the first president who ever had to wrestle with the problems that arose out of the Industrial Revolution. The fact that so many people moved into cities, the fact that so many people became, you know, people who used to be like sturdy individuals, individualists, yeoman farmers and so forth, were turned into kind of in the wheels, in factories and in mines and in steel mills and so forth and so on. This is a huge revolution in America. I mean, he was the first one who had to deal with the fact that, that people could now be kind of cast aside like used parts. He started proselytizing for social programs that would help deal with these problems. He was the first one. While he was president, he passed child labor laws. He passed women's labor laws. He passed the Pure Food and Drug Act. He passed Workmen's Compensation Act, things that kind of leveled the field in the favor of the working man. So he was, in that sense, he was also the godfather of the American progressive movement, another legacy of his that we're living with even today.
And, you know, with his patriotism and his view of, it's described as a muscular America, had he run for office today, they wouldn't know how to pigeonhole him, would they?
No, they wouldn't. You can't put him, he's, one of the things that I love so much about him is that you can't put him in a pigeonhole. You cannot make a liberal out of Teddy Roosevelt, no matter how hard you try. But by the same token, you can't make a conservative out of him either. He just didn't fit into any, of course, even back in his own day, he didn't fit into any category, conservative or a liberal. He had things that appealed to both sides. I mean, the conservatives of today love his patriotism. They love his belief in a strong military. Mm-hmm. They love his belief in negotiating from strength, and they love his family values. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt was a guy who was a family values man 100 years before anybody thought of family values as a political slogan. But the same with liberals. I mean, liberals have stuff to like about him. They like his progressive politics. They particularly like his conservation ethic, which was almost like a religion with him.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been doing Teddy Roosevelt? The name of your show is The Man in the Arena. How long have you been doing this?
The show, Lord help me, about almost 15 years.
Really? Now. Wow.
Yeah, long, long time. Fortunately for me, one of the great things about Theodore Roosevelt is that you just never come to the end of him. I think 400 books now on Theodore Roosevelt, and I'm still finding new stuff out about him. And absolutely amazing. I think one of the reasons he was such an interesting man is because he was interested. You know, there wasn't anything that he wasn't interested in. He could sit for hours and talk to, Harvard professors about mm-hmm. philology and stuff like that, and then turn right around and spend hours equally happily talking to a 6-year-old about his bug collection. there just wasn't anything that he was not interested in.
And that curiosity,
I think that is what made him so interesting a man.
That curiosity is what makes him interesting, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
You know, I was talking to a guest here last week about a newspaper column here in Prescott in which the columnist says he loves to have his mind changed because that means he's learned something new.
Yeah. That's a noble sentiment. It's more easily said than done,
true.
I'm afraid.
Yeah, very good.
One of the things, apropos of Teddy Roosevelt, one of the things about him was that he was a man with the vices of his virtues.
Sure.
I mean, he was a steadfast guy, for sure, but that steadfastness could turn to pigheadedness, and it did occasionally. I mean, he could be an obstinate son of a gun, used to infuriate people. But on balance, I think one of the most admirable men who ever lived.
Sure. Our listeners are probably saying to themselves, you have a true actor's or singer's voice. What other kinds of stage work have you done?
Oh, you're not an agent, are you?
No, but I could be.
Oh, you can. Well, you can get me some work. Yeah, I don't know. I was just born loud. That's pretty much all there is to it. I've had a lot of theatrical training. I've learned how to talk loud, but I was already pretty loud to begin with.
I wish I had your voice, and I'm on radio.
Yeah. Well, I never was on radio, so I learned to talk to large. Now, this is interesting regarding the history, if mm-hmm. we go back to Theodore Roosevelt's period, because politicians and actors, but mostly politicians in those days, routinely spoke to crowds of, 4,000 or 5,000 people without mm-hmm. any amplification at all. So it was customary to be one of the qualifications for being a successful office seeker was just plain, he's loud. Mm-hmm. They can hear him at the back of the hall. So I guess I'm blessed in that regard.
Well, I have a friend who has never developed an indoor voice, and we say he doesn't speak, he orates.
Yeah, well, that's been said of me, too. I have some friends who wish I would develop an indoor voice. That's true.
Yeah, I have to ask you, because offstage you are Derek Evans, and have you ever played the Prescott Elks Theater before?
No, I've never been to the Elks. Years ago, I was at I did a show at the Yavapai Community College.
Yeah.
Wonderful theater they've got there.
Well, wait till you walk into the Elks Theater, because first of all, it's completely restored to its original grandeur back in, I believe, 1904. And if you can imagine walking into a small town's elegant theater and opera house on opening day in 1904, complete with the ushers wearing period garb, that's the Prescott Elks Theater for you.
Yeah, I've seen photos.
It's a wonderful place.
Absolutely wonderful. I have a collection, actually, of restored theaters like that. There are very few people know this, but there are hundreds of them all over the country. It used to be, you know, back in the 19th century, that's how a town would kind of put itself on the map.
Yep.
You would know they were a serious town because they had an opera house.
Yep.
And it was part of, there was a sort of boosterism kind of spirit.
Sure.
And the opera house was, often they were called opera houses, although they never produced any opera. And the reason for that was that theaters were considered dirty, but our opera houses were considered cultural. They called them opera houses in order to get around the moral police. But yeah, they're all over the country. You run into them everywhere. Gorgeous, wonderfully, wonderfully appointed buildings, wonderfully designed. They're just a joy to walk. I worked at a theater up in Wisconsin not too long ago, and I got to work on. I got to stand on the exact same floorboards that Edwin Booth had stood upon. For an actor like me, that's an extraordinary thing. It's just a joy.
Well, we look forward to the joy of seeing you in performance as Teddy Roosevelt, the man in the arena. That's a week from Friday at 7 p.m. Friday the 22nd at the beautiful Prescott Elks Theater on Gurley Street. You can call 777-1370 or go online to PrescottElksTheater.com. Derek Evans, Knock 'Em Dead, thank you for joining us today on Q&A.
Well, thank you. It's been great fun.
You have a great show.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye. That is Derek Evans. Stay tuned because we've got local and state news and weather, followed by a chat with Charlotte Mortimer about the Yavapai County Farm Bureau Ag Matters Speaker Series. That's coming up next on Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood. We stream live around the world at KQNA.com.